When you hire people and you surround yourself with people that are objectively better than you, like I'm not an accountant, I'm never going to be one. But in working with an accountant, I know a lot more about accounting. When I surround myself with players from humongous global bands, I have to rise to the occasion. I end up becoming a better player.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Pete. Peter, if you're wearing a bow tie, but Pete Monfrey. He is the president of Clarity Marketing Support, Inc., which is always fun. I feel like that makes it really unique, or maybe you're a private investigator. He is a seasoned consultant focused on customer acquisition for B2B clients. He helps them determine which half of their marketing isn't working and fixes it. Isn't that lovely? It's a novel idea. Figure it out and fix it. It's a twofer. He has spent 34 years in business, so he knows just a little bit. And he's focused on small and growing clients and solving customer acquisition challenges. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. In fact, 34 years in this business, which is crazy. I can't believe you've been in business 34 years.
It's like, I mean, it's dog years really in the marketing space. I aged much faster working in an agency and owning an agency than I did anything else, I think.
Somebody told me that it's enormously rare to be in business for 34 years in this industry.
It is.
Wow.
I mean, I think I made it all of seven or eight by the time you add up everything together. And I feel like, you know what, I served my two tours and then got out. So I commend you, Admiral, for your lifetime of service to the industry. One of the things I didn't mention at the top is, and people can go and check this out, so I'm plugging early your podcast, but have had the distinct pleasure of being on Pete's podcast, which is available wherever fine podcasts are sold. Actually, they're not sold, but you get what I'm saying. Consumed, yes. So go check it out. We had a fun marketing meets leadership type of conversation. So it was a thrill. But Pete's going to tell you more about that towards the end of the show. But Pete, tell me today, what is on your mind?
What is on my mind? It's vacuous emptiness in here. There's nothing. If I shine the light in one side. Oh, well, let's see. What is on my mind? I still play music, and I have a book coming out that's about leadership, and it's in the context of, like, I've been a professional musician since I was 17 years old. And so I had to figure out very early on what a leader was, and I didn't really want to be it, but nobody else would do it. And so that was what I had to do. And I guess what's on my mind is I still perform, and I injured my hand really badly last week, and I'm having surgery on my hand tomorrow, and I have a show in 3 weeks, and I'm intending to play at this show only because I have to lead the band. And so I can't ever escape the leadership thing. I was trying to get out of it. I was like, I'll just sing and bring in a great guitar player. I'm a great guitar player. And he's like, no, I'm going to need you to lead this thing. And I'm like, damn.
But you almost got out.
I almost did. But leadership, I did another interview. And it made me realize that I've never thought about being a leader. I didn't try to be a leader. I don't even know if I think of myself as a leader, but objectively I am. And so writing a book about it was really odd, but it really flowed very easily.
Well, I would imagine after years of just practical application, you've got enough stories, you've got enough scars and what not to do. As most of us who have been leading for more than about 10 minutes would empathize with you and share that trait. I want to go back to something, though, that you said is that you started as a professional musician at 17, which is remarkable. But you said you recognized leadership was needed, but you didn't want to do it. Can you unpack that? A bit of one, how did you come into the realization, the recognition of leadership as something that is a necessary or essential for getting things done or progressing towards a shared goal? And then what was the thinking or the observation you had that made you say, Yeah, I don't think that's for me.
Well, so I started playing guitar when I was about 14, maybe 13. I'm not quite sure when. And you start off in the basement, and you have what we used to call a record player. And it used to play these things called records. And you'd drop the needle and you'd play like a little tiny bit of a song. And then you'd try to figure out what the heck is Gary Richrath doing. And you'd do this over and over. And then Alex Lifeson. And then you're just doing this for hours upon hours upon hours. But you're basically doing it alone, right? And so the next progression is, and I grew up in Casper, Wyoming. A town that if you sneezed, you would have driven across the town in that course of that sneeze. So I knew that what's the point of this if I'm not performing with a band? I mean, all my heroes have these bands, and that's what I wanted to do. And so at some point it occurred to me, well, I'm going to need a band, which is basically a team. And how on earth do I do that? So I thought I will go join a band. So here I'm just a kid and like 16, and I start to get some opportunities, and I keep getting fired from these bands because I had no idea what to do in a band. And so then I got tossed out of my house when I was 17. So now it started to become really important that I had a team because I needed to pay rent. And so that's when it kind of came to me that if this is going to happen, I'm going to have to be the one that makes it happen. I'm going to have to find the musicians, which in a tiny little town, there's not very many musicians. And they actually have both kinds of music there, country and Western. And so I was able to play both kinds of music. And I was really lucky in that regard. So I was playing country Western music and in places that combined like hockey and disco together. So it was like dancing and fighting. And I was disco hockey. And the club's still there, the biggest club called the Beacon Club. Everybody was sneaking to the Beacon. And I'll be up in Wyoming to go see my mom, and the Beacon Club will still be there, and I won't be there. And there were so many things that I had to intuitively figure out, how to motivate people and how to bring them together. And I had to have you can't just have a band. And this, and of course, when I was 17, it wasn't like this. But eventually I realized you had to have a really clear vision of what you were trying to create. Mm. And you had to have a really good reason why you're trying to do it. And you had to be able to have to communicate with those players. And musicians are not the most reliable types of teammates. And so you had to be pretty good at this to make it work. And then you had to be really tenacious because the first year of starting a band, you don't just start a band. It's like you have this revolving door going on, and every once in a while it'll throw out a player and they'll stick. I always think like a Velcro wall. They'll like stick on the wall. It's like, well, we got two guys now. And then we start changing off the drummer again and again and again. It takes years. And so you have to have all these things and to be focused and keep pushing and pushing and pushing. But when I started to your question, I don't know if I gave it that much thought. It was more just kept trying things and failing and trying and failing, being taken advantage of, and then starting to get some notoriety. And then I moved to Austin when I was 18. So I only lasted in Casper for a year. And in 1981, I moved to Austin, Texas. And I fell into the middle of the Stevie Ray Vaughan thing. So just luck.
Yeah. Do you think... He talked about you noticed that, hey, we got to have a clear vision for this thing if we're actually going to come together and form. Because to your point, you don't just say, well, okay, so we got drums and we've got bass and electric acoustic and a vocalist. All right, so we're magically a band. Like it's like I saw somebody make a funny slide to try to explain the difference between a tornado warning and a tornado watch. It's like if you have all the ingredients to make a taco, but they're not assembled, you've got a watch. And then if they're all assembled, you got a warning. So it's like you had the ingredients for a band, but if you're not playing cohesively, then it's not fully put together. In seeing that, what made you say, yeah, no, I'm happy to be a contributing member, but I don't want to lead this thing? Is there a moment for you where you go, yeah, I don't want that on me?
yesterday, actually, and continuously for the last 47 years. Yeah, all the time. I mean, it's you just have to, you have to be a little nutty to be a leader, because there's it's kind of a thankless job a lot of times. You're going to be doing a lot more work than everybody else. You think, I'll keep talking in musician terms. The side musicians show up, play the show, stick their hand out, grab the money, and leave. Band leader is doing all the promotion, dealing with the clubs, contracts, getting the money, everything. And then, of course, I'm a singer and guitar player, so I also have to play musicians' parts. And then also lead the band at the same time and work the crowd. And so, and then I get paid the least. And I'm the least prepared because I have all these other things to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I think even to this day, I'd rather not. But at the same time, the other side of that coin is I get to execute exactly what I want. I don't have to like be executing someone else's vision, which I do that too. I play with other artists and I'm fine. I can switch back and forth, right? But but I'd prefer at this stage that if I'm going to put all that effort in, the output is going to be what I envision. Mm-hmm. And I'm very uncompromising. I got fired my brother like 3 times.
Oh.
Because he wouldn't play what I wanted.
Yeah. So, well then, from that perspective, though, if you're uncompromising, if you feel like you have clarity of I want to do this, not that, how do you reconcile that with not wanting to step up into the leadership role where you would get that sort of influence, that sort of control over how this whole thing is going to go, if for no other reason than to control what's happening to you?
Yeah, it's just a pragmatic thing where you start thinking to yourself, why am I doing all this work? Like, I don't have to. I mean, part of it might be is I don't know if I'm a good enough player just to be a full-time sideman, right? Mm. And so being a band leader allows you to, you don't have to be the best player, but you have to be a really good leader. Mm. But I think the hesitation was just, I don't want all the headache that goes with it. I just want to play and enjoy it. I love to play music and I like to bring it to people and the joy that it brings everybody and all that administrative stuff. Oh, who cares? I mean, I even have dress codes in my bands. Like I tell them how to dress, but I don't tell them how to play.
Okay.
I just make sure I have the right people and then I let them do their thing.
Right.
So is that leading from the back? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on who you're asking and where they're standing. Something that you have to forgive.
It sounded dog. Like someone clapping.
Yeah. So Emma's clapping for us. She's the audience of one. That. Yeah. Thanks, Emma. No, let's walk this over into the land of business or just organizational leadership, because a for-profit, nonprofit doesn't matter on this. Right. But a lot of what you describe reminds me of the conversations I have with so many founders that they were really good at doing something. Now, you and I, we could talk about the marketing background side of things. Is typically you had a founder who was good at design, copy, coding, whatever it might be, of a certain type of media, of video production, stuff like that. People get started based on their strengths, and then it sort of grows, and they fund the ancillary products and services. But there comes that moment where, as a founder, you have to decide, do I just want to stay as this excellent technician, practitioner of a thing? And maybe I have a couple of employees or a couple of part-time contractors or something like that to get stuff done with what's coming in. Or do I really want to lead a company?
Yeah.
And you being someone you've done both, you've led in business as well as your examples here in music. In the book I shared with you, Renegades, right? You're figuring out that leap from being renegade founder to being a renegade leader. Like, there's all these good things about you, all these qualities that made you fantastic in starting and launching a business, right? Because the failure rates are so high, it seems like the dumbest thing in the world to start a business of any kind. But at some point, if you start seeing some progress and make it long enough, you hit this point and you've got to make this decision. Am I going to make shifts and become that renegade leader and cross this little chasm? Or am I going to say, you know what, that's not really where I want to go? And I could say there's probably nothing really wrong with that, apart from you may never have seen what your dream and your idea could have become. Sure. Or how many people you could have helped. So can you talk from just the business side of things and how some of what you were talking about has translated to your thoughts, your practices of starting and staying in business?
Yeah, it's so much the same. I am that technician, and my wife and I started this company in 1990, and we were good at we were graphic designers. And this is before, it was this 1990 before computers. And so we had X-Acto knives and Band-Aids is what we worked with primarily. And the leadership thing, it became a necessity because it was really exactly the same dynamic. We were not able to really make a living doing our craft, our trade. And it dawned on us, I'm a slow learner. So it took a year or two to figure out there's this entire other set of skills that we didn't even know existed that have to do with running the business. And so it's like, well, now I need two completely different set of skills. And of course, later that would translate to 10 sets of skills. But we were at least smart enough and we were paying attention and we were able to get advice from people that were running the types of companies. We wanted to be an agency. Now, I wish somebody told me that was a dumb idea back then, but that's what we wanted to do. And we knew that we had to have people that were better than us and had different and a more diverse skill set. And to this day, we're still great friends with our first designer who became our art director, a guy named Michael DeMilo. And it was us three at first. Mm-hmm. And then it became 23 of us. And it's really nuts when I think about how that worked. But again, it wasn't something that I plotted a course. It was very much in a reactive type of mode where I think we eventually had a vision for what we wanted. We didn't know how to get there, but we took some risks and we just kept trying and we kept going, trying to just solve the problems as they came. And pretty soon we found that we outgrew the offices above the auto parts store with the giant hole in the floor where you'd fall through to the auto parts store if you weren't careful. But we put a piece of plywood over it, right? And so, we ended up, next thing I know, I'm building out an office downtown in downtown Milwaukee on Water Street. And we're putting in walls and we're putting in infrastructure and we're putting in lighting. And maybe because now it's so many years later, it's all blurry, but it seemed like just one thing happened after another. And I find myself with an entire floor of a building full of employees. And so what choice do you have? You're either going to go down badly, or you're going to lead. And there were times that I was a terrible leader because I was taking on too much myself and not delegating enough. And I still do it. I still revert back to it, right? I mean, it's almost a constant thing. It's hard for me to say, this is when this happened and this happened. It just rolled along and I had to grow into, I think, almost like different levels of leadership. Like leading a band is one level, leading a company with the level of overhead of a downtown office is a whole nother deal, right? And then you hit
the
that first
higher
seven figures, or everything starts multiplying very quickly, and you have to adapt to that. And at some point, this is funny to me because I think it was because I met you and a couple other people. I started to think, oh my gosh, I'm a leader. What? When did that happen? So it was not something I really thought about. It's just that, but there's no doubt that I knew I could envision the end result that I wanted, more or less, and then work towards that. And I guess part of my personality is I'm never quite satisfied either. And so it just feeds on itself. But having the sense to like not try to be an expert at everything and know everything, but to surround yourself with people that, I hired a guy from Schwarz Pharma, the big pharmacy company, who was 20 years older than me, Bernie, still my buddy. And so I'm hiring people older than me, way more experienced than me, and I'm their boss, right? But that's literally how I did it. I think my PR guy was probably 25, 30 years older than me. Jordan, if you're out there. That's how we did it. It wasn't anything that I knew. It was the combination of knowledge of all these people and then letting them do their thing and listening to them. And then also sometimes overriding them.
And knowing really when to do that.
Yeah. Especially somebody who's much more experienced than you, and you're saying, yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Right. That last little bit reminds me of a Steve Jobs quote that says, we don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they can tell us what to do.
Yeah. And they did.
And they should.
They didn't have any hesitation telling me what to do.
Yeah. So it sounds a lot like your focus was on just figuring out the next right thing to do. It's like, oh, well, if we're going to have 23 people, then we're going to need a different office space. Well, what should that look and feel like? And if I'm going to oversee them, well, then I should probably figure out how to get the best out of them so that their potential is uncorked in service to the organization and the clients that you're serving and have paid you probably a good bit of money.
And if I wanted to keep my home, I mean, there was some really basic
self-interest
things that needed that forced me to do things and things like implement an ERP system. Nobody wants to do that for fun, you know, but these are all things that had to happen for us to manage this kind of sprawling team.
Yeah.
Sprawling to me. Now, people with hundreds of employees, they're just going to laugh at me, but that was a lot of people.
Right. It can't. Yeah. I mean, well, everybody started out leading no one and then their first direct report and then went from there. It can be, you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm responsible for another human.
Entire families.
Yeah, I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but it's a bit like the feeling when you start having kids and you're like, holy cow, okay, I'm no longer only responsible for me, myself, and I. And you talk about being responsible for families. I had a couple that they didn't meet in my agency, but they got married while working for me. And during a really rough patch, I had to let them both go. I had to axe an entire family's income in one conversation. Something I don't wish on anybody, but it is a really sobering thing. And you do get the choice of, am I going to step up here? And like you said, and I think you said it well, is am I going to step up and lead? Or am I just going to fumble this and royally screw it up and affect other people? Which if you have even the slightest bit of a conscience that, you know, that weight of responsibility should weigh on you. But then even just from a self-interest, like I want to put food on the table for my family and keep a roof over our head. And I don't think most small business owners and leaders are out to looking to like hit the jackpot and be hundreds of millions of dollars overnight or anything like that. Is usually they're looking to do good work that they enjoy with people they enjoy being around, and they just want to do well and do good if they can. So if we're thinking through that particular journey and we're thinking about leadership, I think one of the things in taking the next right step that you mentioned is sort of knowing where you wanted to go, having a vision for what a future state might look like. Would you say that you took that as a way to reverse engineer your decisions? Maybe much the way that you kind of know at the end of a song or the end of a set that you're like, I want the audience to have experienced this, to maybe hopefully feel this. Is it something similar or am I hallucinating here?
I'm not sure. It's an interesting idea because it's not something I ever really thought about before, but it's almost like you're constantly reverse engineering, almost like on a daily basis. Like even when I'm playing a show. Now, when I say a show, I play little clubs in Austin, Texas. In the past, I played in very big shows, but I was a sideman. I was just a hired hand, right? But when I'm running my own show, I'm constantly doing that. And I'm trying to figure out, it's almost like a large language model. I'm looking at what's the song we just played and what would be the right song to play now based on what the crowd is telling me and what they're feeling and what's happening and what's the mood in the room and trying to save the closer song for the time. And then running a business is almost the same way. Like, what's happening among the employees? What's happening among the clientele? Did we win a deal? Did we lose a deal? Is there something that do we need to do better? It's almost just a constant. I think at least if you're doing it right, you're constantly rethinking. I don't know. Are there people that don't do that? Well, they just are like, I'm going to do this and I'm not going to think about it again.
Right. So there's a concept or a term I've just encountered, and I love getting new words and phrases for things, but it's Jim Collins. He wrote the book Good to Great, Built to Last, all this. Well, he calls it a monograph, but it's almost like a small add-on chapter for applying good to great in social sectors. And in one section, he talks about like what you were saying at the beginning of getting the right people on the bus, get them in the right seats, right? That came out of his research. And he says that the people that you're looking for are neurotically productive, that it's almost a compulsion to do your best. That's what you are wired to do. It's in your DNA to do it that way. A friend of mine and I, she's just started a business. She's previously built and launched a nonprofit. Now she's starting a consultancy for nonprofits and small businesses that are trying to get off the ground. And she and I were talking about this because of some experiences and that she's had. And she's just like, I've always, just like you, it's like, are there people that don't think this way? Are there people that are just like, I'm going to sort of mail it in? Are there, she said, well, I think part of the way I run is because I was employed by one of the largest property management companies in the world. And like just the standard of efficiency and effectiveness and how we run and how we do these things. She got exposed to that early on. And in a phrase I learned from Alex Hormozi was just, you reset the minimum standard. Like whatever that is. So he talks about when he gets around billionaires and he's talking with them and he's like, well, what are you doing and how are you doing it? And he may do pieces of content. We'll stick with that since this is, we have a marketing shared background. Is he was talking with a guy and he was actually resetting the minimum standard for him. Is he was like, well, I'm trying to build thought leadership. I've built my company, but I want to build my own personal brand. And I'm doing like 30 pieces of content a month. And Alex goes, okay, well, my team and I, we do 300 pieces a month or a week. And all that guy said is, thank you. You've reset my minimum standard or minimum expectation. I do think one, for your own personal development, I would recommend that for anybody. Get around those that just have a high drive. Right. Like, I mean, you were talking about the backgrounds of some of the players that you've got coming to the show, and they've played with some of the biggest names in the world, as have you. And it's just like the minimum standard of what a professional looks like. Not to just keep throwing references. I'm just stringing together a bunch of thoughts here with you. But Stephen Pressfield's book, Turning Pro. He famously wrote The War of Art, which is just a beautiful book. I used to require it for reading and onboarding at my agency. And it's an itty bitty book, but he talks about turning pros. Like there are those that when you turn pro, there's a discipline, there's a standard of excellence that you will not allow yourself to drop below if it's within your control. And it sounds a lot like that's somehow that got imprinted on you early on. And then you carried that out and modeled it as part of your leadership of just, well, we're just not going to do things that way because there's this higher way of doing what we're doing. Would you say that was an important part of
your
leadership?
You're so insightful. Yeah. You know, it comes from my dad, you know, and he was like that. And I worked for his company, maybe one of the only jobs I've ever had. And he was unrelenting. Even in his old age, I have this is a mold to make violins. And so at some point in his final years, he started making violins and he made them by hand. And they would take 8 or 9 months to make a violin. And I have one of his early ones, and he had put this thing away. It's a beautiful instrument, but it wasn't perfect. And so he put that 8 months in and then squirreled it away. It wasn't good enough. And then he built 3 more. And then he, I think he ultimately built, I'm not sure, nobody's sure how many, but probably about 20 of these things. And they are world-class instruments, but this one has the F holes are not quite perfect. And I mean, it's just funny, but yeah, that's, I think that's where it comes from. And, but the other thing about when you hire people and you surround yourself with people that are objectively better than you at whatever it is that you hire them to do, like I'm not an accountant, and I'm never going to be one.
Same.
But in working with an accountant, I know a lot more about accounting. When I surround myself with players from humongous global bands, I have to rise to the occasion. I end up becoming a better player. And this happened to me 25 years ago where I inherited a rhythm section from a really well-known artist and I got his entire rhythm section. I was very nervous about that. And I don't think I was quite ready for them, but it was a beautiful thing. I mean, it was a very important time in terms of my own development as a player, where I really had to improve fast. And they enabled me to do that. And it's not something that I was necessarily conscious of other than my insecurity about it. The more we played, the better I got. And that just continues to go on. And I'm not actually a great player, but what I figured out is, and this is in business and in music, I know what I'm good at. I'm good at leading. I'm good at establishing the vision. I'm good at the business part of it. The side men, they might be a lot more famous than me. They don't want to do that. They need a leader, and I need a kick-ass bass player, right? Yeah. So, because I can't play bass, or piano is another one. Like I will die wanting to play the piano like Ray Charles or my friend Floyd Domino, but I will never do that. So instead, I get Floyd. He's George Strait's piano player. And so you can only imagine how good this guy is. And it's just, he's so good that I get distracted. I forget what song we're playing because I'm like listening to him like a fan. And I just forget completely what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, I have to sing something now. But that's the dynamic, I think. That's, no leader is gonna be like, well, this thing is because of me. No, it isn't. It's because if you're doing it well and you're doing it right and you're honest about it, all these people you surround yourself with make you better at what you do.
Yeah. And I think what I hear from you is there's also, if you want to lead world-class people, whether in music or in business, you've got to have some humility about where your talents and your strengths begin and end. Is that fair to say?
Well, absolutely. And what, you know, if you, what do the best leaders say? What's the secret to your success? What are the best leaders in the world going to say? Are they going to say, because I'm freaking great? No, they're going to be like, because of my team. This is not because of me. This is because of my team. It's not a false humility. It's if they're honest, that's what they're going to say. Because it is the same thing with in music. I don't introduce myself to a crowd. I introduce the band and I give them all of the credit. And usually someone's going to introduce me, but not always. It doesn't matter. They really are. This is not a false humility. They are literally why I was just telling you about a show that we have coming up. One of the players I've never met yet. We do not rehearse. This is a band that is not actually a band. It's just a bunch of musicians that I put together for this one show. And no one will know. It will be very cohesive and very, very tight. And the reason is because of them. All I have to do is make sure I've got the lyrics and that I'm able to guide them in a way that they can just do their thing. If they just do their thing, I look good. That's all there is to it.
There's a thought that's come up for me as you were describing all of that. I'd be curious of your take. The way in which you have described leadership, and I'll start from the band example or metaphor, however you want to term it, is leadership's not just a thing you tack on to doing stuff, it's actually, it's as discernible and necessary and developable. I don't know if that's a word, but I have a degree in speech common. The only thing I can do is make up words. But it's as discrete a skill worth calling out and having someone sit in and develop as playing the bass, as playing drums. Like, it's not just it would be great if somebody who's already really good at this could just sort of have a little bit of this in their personality. Like, it's a personality trait. It's actually, the way you describe it is this discrete, discernible thing that can and should be developed. Is, how do you think about that? Is that, I'm putting words in your mouth or thoughts in your head, but would you agree with that statement or disagree, and why?
No, I have this view about everything can be learned. We all come into this world and we can't do anything. We don't know how to do anything. And so we learn everything. You know, I was just talking to a client who said, I'm just not creative at all. I said, yeah, you are. Everybody is. It's something you have to learn. Leadership, same thing. You're not, there's this idea of the born leader. No. It's, you learn it. And I learned from books I read, and I learned from people around me, and I learned from employees, and I learned from clients actually a lot. And when I think about this band I tossed together, two of them are band leaders.
Wow.
But for this show, they're side men. One's a producer. Wow. And so, well, actually, both of them are pretty well-known producers. So that's the pinnacle of leadership in the music business. They make albums for other people. And so it's a very interesting dynamic. A good leader can be a follower and flip back and forth between these two states, but all of it is learned behavior. I mean, I think the biggest thing that gets in people's way is their preconceptions of what they think is possible and what, like, I'm just not a good leader. I'm just not good at blah, blah, blah. Just not good at, with me, it was math. In fourth grade, I decided I was not good at math. And so that guided my reality well into adulthood until I realized that that was just a story I was telling myself, that I had a teacher that wasn't very good in fourth grade. And so that's what I thought. And I made choices avoiding math, right?
Based on that narrative, that story that you started telling yourself.
Now I'm a consultant. But to my ears in math all the time. And I'm still terrible at it. But I learned it. And I always feel like if I had to go back to school and somehow get through calculus, I bet I could. I don't think it'd be much fun, but I bet I could.
It'd be no different than the way that the story arc you shared on this episode today of 17 years old, out on your own, professional musician, saying, yeah, I don't want that leadership stuff. Like, I'm here to sound great and amazing. You'll just let me do my business. But then saw, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to learn this leadership thing. If I want to keep going, if I want to do this, and you can be guided by your own sense of right and wrong, ethics, morality, and all of that. But even just from a functional perspective of, well, I'd like to go further in this thing that I say that I care about and I'm intrigued by.
Well, sleeping on a park bench in Casper, Wyoming will drive you to do things that you might not normally do. Or in my 69 Ford Falcon, sleeping in the back seat, and winter's coming. You know, and so that's it. I mean, it's like, there's very basic things I think that drive people. And if you just go with that, you'll find out that you can achieve things that you, if you listen to the little voices in your head, you won't get there.
Yeah. I mean, I was about to ask you, what's the first step someone can do with little to no money? And I guess, so sleeping on a park bench in Casper, Wyoming, that's step one.
Yeah. Don't do that. No, you know,
but if somebody did want to learn leadership, if somebody wanted to break out of this narrative or say, I like what Pete's saying. I want to play in those sort of ensembles. I want to be a part of that sort of team. Maybe it's in music. Maybe it's just in work. I want to be on that sort of all-star team, but maybe I got some stories that are in my way or a wrong perspective that's blocking me. What's that first step someone can take to no money?
It's little to no money is the hard part for me. And then I guess I was there too. And I like to revisit it every once in a while. I don't like to, but little to no money. There are mentors around you that there are people that like to mentor people and they will do it for free. I mean, you can also pay coaches and pay mentors, but that's really where you're going to get insight to get a really honest mentor to really expose your blind spots and to tell you that what you're saying to yourself isn't truth. It's in your head. The other thing is get the mindset of burning bridges. And so in other words, if you're sleeping in your car in Casper, Wyoming, and by the way, I finished high school. I kept going to school, and I was really lucky that I had a skill that would make me a very basic living. And so there was no going back. The bridge was burned. There was no choice but to go forward. And so if you're still hedging your bets, I hear this from people that say, well, I want to start my own company, but you know, I've got this job and I like to keep this job and I'm going to start this company on the side. And yeah, that's somebody who's probably never going to start a company. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's the wolves at your door that create growth and meaningful change. And you need those wolves. You need them.
Yeah.
I live with them, but that's a different story because I have big, scary dogs.
Yeah.
That's what's driven me my whole life, I think, is uncompromising in terms of my vision and what I'm trying to do and my own personal sort of pride in my work and everything I do. I want to try to do it at a world-class level. And I don't let money stop me from doing it. There's always a way, right? But the other side of that coin is pure economic necessity. I mean, I don't know what it's like to live at home until you're 25 or have the security of a job. I've never had a job, actually. I've worked for myself. The only job I had was working for my dad, and I don't think that really counts because he'd fire me and then hire me back again and fire me again and hire me back.
Yeah. Fire you at dinner, hire you back after breakfast.
Yeah. He's just like I do with my son, but I don't have to fire him because he's amazing. But I think the first thing to do is, well, the other thing that's extremely inexpensive are books.
Yeah.
Read. This culture of social media and sound bites and short form, it's not going to serve you. You need to be able to read an actual book. And so, and then after a while, you'll have read hundreds of books. I think about how many books I've read. It's nuts. Although now a lot of them just support a large, heavy television in my room. But I read them all.
Right. Well, speaking of books, you mentioned your own. Can you talk for just a second about that and where people can be looking for that? And then where else? If people say, hey, I love the things that Pete is saying, I'd love to connect with him, find out more about him, listen to him a little bit further, where would you send them as well?
So the book is just getting finished up right now. So it'll be on Amazon and it'll be everywhere fine books are consumed. I'm stuck on writing my own bio and trying to make it fit this idea. Like my bio is really all over the place in terms of all the different things I've done, but I'm just stuck on the easiest part of the book, which I think is pretty funny. The book itself was so easy to write. And then I'm stuck on the last part about the author. Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn/in/ Pete Monfrey. There's a bunch of Pete Monfreys out there. We're all cousins. Don't sweat it. If you find one of us, they'll be able to point you in the direction. And then if you're interested in the podcast, it's called B2BMarketingMindset.com. And we're shooting our 111th episode this Thursday, maybe 112. I'm not sure, but those are two good places to find me. And I'll throw this out. One more thing, agencyfoundersnetwork.com. It's an online community of marketing services businesses that are trying to go from being a vendor to a trusted strategic advisor. And so this is where you're going to find mentors and you're going to find peers. And it's basically, I'm recreating exactly what I did to go from this broke little design firm to offices and Fortune 100 clients and all the stuff we thought wanted. Were great, great people there, including Kenny. You're one of the experts there, so
that's right.
Yes, you can come hit me up, shoot me a message. I know that this is, you know, as of this recording, you're just getting going. So starting to get into that cadence of what sort of events and conversations and panels and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're an agency leader, owner, founder, what have you, or anywhere in that sort of
design firm or a media production company or a copywriting content,
right?
You know,
everything in between,
all kinds of agencies. We use the word agency loosely, but marketing services businesses.
But if you're out there, this is fantastic. I wish I had something like this when I had started my agency. The closest thing I had was the HubSpot partner community, and I loved it, and it was great. But it was a lot of like you had to go and sort of find it and get it, or you just had the academy with some lessons. And this is a place where you can connect with real people, find some travelers for the journey, maybe find your next collaborator and learn from people who have scars. Maybe you can avoid a few of them yourself. You'll get your own. Don't worry.
Don't worry.
But everybody in there, because I know Pete, everybody in there that he invites is leading with a limp. And I mean that in the absolute best way. So, as you just heard for the last, 45, 50 minutes, he doesn't do anything that isn't world class. So
thank you.
I hope everybody will go and take a look, or if somebody that would benefit from it, you got a friend that's getting started or is rolling in a business that could use that kind of help, please send them over.
Yeah. And it's free to join. And I'm blessed with the subject matter experts on this platform. They're really so amazing people, and they're just my friends. They want to help. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Right heart, brilliant minds and a shared heart in there. So Pete, thank you again. I certainly don't think this will be our last recorded conversation. I think we'll just keep bouncing back and forth between our podcasts, but looking forward to seeing this get out in the open air and help as many people as possible. Thank you so much for being a guest. And thank you to the listeners. Honestly, like Pete and I, we're going to have a great time whether you listen to this or not, but we deeply, deeply appreciate the time that you take to listen to consume. And we hope that you are impacted and benefited from this conversation. And one way to make sure that I keep finding the Pete Monfries of the world to bring onto this podcast and add value is to leave a rating, leave a review, give me some feedback. It's also just a simple and free way for you to make a positive impact on your fellow leader. There's millions of us leaders out there, and we're all on our journeys at different points and moments in time. And giving this podcast a little extra love and attention, so a like, a rate, a review, a subscription, what have you, puts us in the path of more people. Someone you may never know, you could be helping change their life because one conversation unlocked their next step. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.
Thanks, Kenny.